Hi, this is Dave Bickler, the original voice of Eye of the Tiger, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, it's Jacob DeRaps, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, everyone, this is Danny Vaughn from Taiketto, and it is time to turn it up because you are listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 568 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 568, this is our first of the year 2026, so for those of you who've been with us, welcome back. We had a little bit of a hiatus over the late December into early January, very slow time for tours and such in the Pittsburgh area, so great to be back at it. In this episode, we have two new guests to the podcast. We have joining us from the band Taiketto, Mr. Danny Vaughn, talking about the band's newest album, which will be out at the end of March. And then we have an artist very pleased to introduce you to. His name is Jacob DeRaps. The band is DeRaps, and they're playing in the Craft House in Pittsburgh early in the month of February. We think you're going to love their music, so we'll get to DeRaps in just a little while. But we're going to start out Danny Vaughn, Taiketto, a band that I think everyone kind of recognizes the name, have not toured extensively in the United States. He and I had a discussion on if they'd actually ever played Pittsburgh. So if you know that, drop us an email. Use the contact link. We'd love to know. Neither one of us could pinpoint a date. We know they toured with Winger in the early 90s. Their debut album, Don't Come Easy, was a pretty successful album and really a great listen if you're looking for something that maybe you overlooked in 1991. Don't Come Easy from Taiketto is a great place to start. They've got a new album coming out, Closer to the Sun, it's called. Going to be out in March, I believe March 20th this year, Closer to the Sun. There are two singles out now. We're going to play you one in just a moment. Get into that interview with Danny Vaughn of Taiketto.
I used to hit the rat race running, head down and moving fast. Always trying to gain the upper hand. Now it's time to make some changes, maybe take a few steps back. I'm drawing fewer lines into the sand. We rise, we fall. We give it our all. We fall, we rise with hope in our eyes. When it's down to the wire, we'll walk through the fire. We rise, we fall, and we're gonna stand tall. We had lightning in our bottle, we had trouble on the ropes. We dared the world to do its worst. But change is always constant. No matter
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line from Taiketto, Mr. Danny Vaughn. How are you doing today, Danny?
All right, John. How's it going?
It is going fantastic. You guys are set to release a new album, Closer to the Sun, your first in 10 years, if my memory serves me. At the end of March. Can you talk a little bit about the new record? I've had a chance to listen to the first two singles. We'll give our listeners a taste of We Rise leading into this interview. But a fantastic track, really melodic, upbeat. I think exactly what the world needs right now. But can you talk about the collection of songs for us?
Well, thank you, actually. That was really the goal. You know, when we finally got together to make the record, as always, I kind of have a group meeting and say, right, you know, what kind of album do we want to make here? You know, mm-hmm. what are we shooting for? And of course, I've been very fortunate in that Taiketto's first album is still considered a classic, particularly in Europe. It's played all the time. So Don't Come Easy was an album that so many remember. And remaking it didn't make a whole lot of sense. People ask you to do that sometimes, you know, why can't you just remake your first album? It's like, yeah, not so easy. But the idea was perhaps to find out what was it about that record mm-hmm. that people held on to for so long, you know, that are still listening to it. Why is that? And we kind of came to that even some of the darker songs like Standing Alone has a positive moment in it. Yeah. And so it's a very positive record. And so that's what we came to. So let's do that. You know, there's enough out there that's divisive and either it's political or religious or whatever that's putting everybody at everybody's throats. Mm-hmm. Let's just go past that and try look over our shoulders and try and create a vibe that basically my goal is you put the album on in your car, you don't take it off until it's done. You know, it's an album you just drive to.
Yeah. And that's a great way to, I think, categorize it. And exactly. I look at back at, you know, Don't Come Easy. That was 1991. You know, the shift in the music industry kind of reflected society. Things got a little darker. You look at 2026, the world, not all that different. You know, in some respects, you know, and I think there's a couple albums I think that come through and are almost like a ray of sunshine. I think this could be that album for 2026. My hats off to you.
Thank you.
Was it something that when you approach, you know, lyrically, I think it's pretty easy to say, okay, I want to write some positive messages. Maybe not always easy to come up with inspiration for those songs, but musically, are there things you did, keys that you used for the songs that give it a brighter feel? You know, if you look at, do you get to that level or is it just a gut feel when you hear it?
I think, certainly from a creative perspective, I think it was more gut, you know, rather mm-hmm. than go in and say, right, we need, you know, A major, F major, you know.
Right.
It was much more to do, again, with, what are we saying? What do we want to say? I mean, the lyrics are pretty much my domain and mm-hmm. my solo albums, I let myself go wherever I want to go, you know, and some of them can be very story specific, you know, yeah. song about a particular homeless man or, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. And for this one, I kind of wanted to do a bit more. There are some specifics on the album, but it's more broad strokes. Okay. Which as a lyricist, you can get kind of caught up because, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've written for myself and other people. So I've probably got a back catalog of about 250 songs. And you spend a lot of time going, I've said all this already. What do I say now? You know? And it was kind of like every now and then you just have to step back and remember KISS, keep it simple, stupid, you know, and just deliver the message. It's okay. You don't have to be Bob Dylan every time.
Yeah. And the acronym of KISS and the band KISS, there's a similarity to the concept, you know, just fun, you know, don't overstress. You don't need to make, you know, the deepest lyrics to make a positive message. Are you a lyrics first kind of writer or did you guys kind of jam it out and then you have to kind of squirrel away and come up with the words to kind of fit what the band has written, or how do you approach that?
You know, it's never the same twice. My feeling is always that the better songs are the ones that start with the lyrics, because as soon as I've got a lyric in front of me, mm-hmm. you know, singing is not just a melodic instrument. It's also a percussive instrument. You know, people like Steven Tyler really exemplify that, you know, where it's almost like, you know, he'll do a scat. It'll sound like a bongo solo, you know? So when you get a set of lyrics in front of you as a singer, you almost immediately know how you want to sing it. Mm-hmm. You might even get, you know, the key in your head right away. Oh, that's going to sit right here in my register. So it makes coming up with the music that goes behind it a little bit easier.
Right.
It's harder when somebody comes to you with a piece of music and says, you know, can we put lyrics to this? Having said that, a good half the album came that way. You know, We Rise, the new single, that started with our guitar player, Harry. You know, he wrote that riff and came up with that chorus, and I kind of structured around it.
Is it harder as a vocalist when you're searching for the vocal melody, when the guitar parts are already there kind of waiting for you to lay it on top? Is that harder to do, that you don't just end up kind of echoing the guitar riff vocally?
It depends on what the guitar is doing. Yeah, it can be. It's not even a matter of, that's not the hardest part. If you get a particularly busy guitar part, it's like, yeah. All right, where do I fit in here? You know, the guitar part is just, you know, where do I go with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think of like Don Dokken and Kiss of Death is a great example of where the guitar part is so busy. It kind of exemplifies exactly what you're saying. And you kind of, you need to go somewhere totally different, so you don't just blend in, where, you know, a singer like Ozzy sometimes can get away with singing essentially the guitar part. You know, I often marvel at the ability to do that, because that's sometimes very hard, is to disconnect yourself. You know, you've got to relate to the guitar, but you don't necessarily want to mirror it.
I try not to, generally speaking.
It's been about 10 years since Reach came out. Is making new music something that did you guys do at this point more to satisfy your own creative itch, as opposed to, I mean, sales is tough, and again, you guys have enjoyed success in Europe, Asia, more so than the United States. Is it still a lucrative thing to do in those markets, or is this just a, you know, sometimes an introspective thing to give you guys the inspiration to keep doing this?
Albums are not really a lucrative part of the business mm-hmm. anymore. Bands at our level, at any rate, we survive on merchandise sales.
Mm-hmm.
And fans know that, you know, and they, bless them, they come to shows prepared. So yeah, they might buy the CD, but chances are it'll be the t-shirts that keep you from going into debt, you know?
Yeah.
But yes, I'm never going to stop writing. I don't like the idea of being thought of as a nostalgia act. Yeah. You know, I like to keep kind of pushing forward and see where we go. And we're in a very, you know, happily bizarre period in the band's history, where 34 years down the line, we're growing now possibly bigger than we ever were.
Yeah.
We're headlining mid-level festivals. We're being asked back to territories that we haven't played in years and years. For whatever reason, ever since COVID, it's kind of been this wave that's building and building, which I couldn't be happier about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I look at, like, you guys, you know, we had mentioned before the interview started about you toured with Winger. And I remember Reb telling me very distinctly that if they had just released that debut album a few years earlier, and I think you guys probably fall right into that same situation. If Don't Come Easy had come out in 1987 as opposed to 1991, you guys would have enjoyed much larger commercial sales and could just be a nostalgia act. You could just keep, you know, let's do the 25th anniversary, the 35th anniversary.
Sure. It's possibly true. My original drummer, Mike Arbini, and I are still best friends. We talk all the time. He's a New Jersey boy. And we have that conversation every now and again. And with age comes wisdom. And he said, you know, if we had brought it out in 1987 and we had gotten successful, I reckon at least one of us would have died by now.
Yeah. And there's, let's be honest, zero chance you would be having the conversation with him today because you'd be at each other's throats. There'd be lawyers involved.
It's entirely possible. There's one band that defied all of that in all the MTV behind the musics, Huey Lewis and the News, the only band that survived it all, you know, same guys all the way through, split everything, equal fight. Nobody hated each other. It's like no drugs. What's up with these guys?
What were they doing wrong? For those who haven't necessarily followed the lineup, you've got some kind of industry vets. You've got Chris on bass, who, correct me if I'm wrong, was with Thunder. Johnny D, who plays with Doro now. Many people know him from Britney Fox. Ged on keyboard. Harry playing guitar for you. So you've got a really nice lineup. You know, some of these guys have been at this for 10, 12 years with you now at this point. Do you guys write it like as a band when it comes to this, or do you kind of whirl away and come up with a lot of the stuff? I know you play guitar and on your own, but how does the writing kind of materialize?
I think on this album, I wrote like four of the songs myself.
Okay.
There are plenty of co-writes. There's some with some outside writers. There's a song called Starts With a Feeling that I co-wrote with Peterick from Survivor.
Okay.
Who's a friend and obviously knows how to pen a tune. And the guys would send me stuff and then I would kind of put that in the big folder. And then I would start to filter through and see, this riff's kind of speaking to me, this idea, I think is where we want to go, and kind of filter it down, So it kind of went like that. It all comes through me at some point, sure. And then I kind of decide how it's all going to sound.
Sure. So I guess the million-dollar question, as far as touring, obviously you guys do quite a bit of Europe. I mentioned Asia. Any chance of the United States, or is it just not cost-effective to kind of bring that whole unit over here at this point?
That's it. It's the financial side of it. What a lot of people don't know is that in the last couple of years, America's immigration policy changed towards working entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
And price for like a 2-year visa is over $1,000.
Yeah.
So, we got five guys. Now, two of us are still holding American passports. So three guys, that's $3,000 right there. Five international flights, that's another $5,000. So we're $8,000 in the hole before we step on stage and play in front of 50 people.
So you got to sell a lot of t-shirts to recoup all that.
Yeah, you really do. We've been, really, really lucky to be kind of an alternate regular on the Monsters of Rock cruises, which we're on every other year. Thank you, Larry, for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the closest we get to our American audience. I'm still hoping that, if we could manage to get like two or three of the summer festivals in a row, and then you could pack a few club shows around that, that it would still be viable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that's always being discussed, but we've never found a way around the big problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not alone in that. That, unfortunately, unless you're playing 1,200 people a night, a lot of bands just can't make the math work. And that's.
Well, the other side is also just the geography. So we're doing a UK tour in April. I think it's 10 shows. The longest drive is 3 hours.
Yeah.
Now if Tyketto came to the States, we could play New York, New Jersey. We could play Chicago. That's a nice long drive.
Yeah.
We could play LA. We could play maybe somewhere in Dallas, and you've got put these massive spaces where it would take days to get there. And all the people you bring with you have got to be paid and fed and lodged. Mm. And, it just becomes one of those headaches where you're like, oh, I don't think I could ever do this.
Yeah.
Consequently, but the only thing I can do in the States, which I have been doing on a semi-regular basis, is coming and playing a solo acoustic shows.
Okay.
The overhead's so low.
Yeah. Yeah. One, you need a sound guy and a guitar. That's a reasonable thing. So we'll keep an eye out. Yeah. For those interested, you mentioned the merchandise aspect. You guys have done a great job with this album, with different variants on the vinyl and t-shirts and signed items and stuff. So we'll include a link to that. And Danny, I want to congratulate you on a great record. Wish you all the best with it. And just keep us in touch if you find your way back to the States. We'd love to see you. And thank you for your time, man.
No, thank you. And really appreciate your helping get the word out there. And stay as warm as you can do.
Yeah. All right, a big thank you to Danny Vaughn of Tyketto. The new album will be out on March 20th. The album is called Closer to the Sun. If you check out the band's website, there are two singles out now, Higher Than High, which is a fantastic song. That was the lead single. And then We Rise, which is the song we played for you. I think they give you a good sense of what the album is all about. And hopefully from the interview, you'll want to check that out. You can go to Tyketto's website. We'll have links in the show notes. You can pre-order that. It's available on, I believe, black vinyl, a red vinyl, and then a reddish-orange kind of geode-looking vinyl. Some really cool stuff. And as he mentioned, and I appreciate the honesty, you know, bands really live and die off merch sales. So, you know, if you like the band, you know, making a t-shirt isn't just a fashion statement, it's a way of supporting bands. So I invite you to check those links out. We're going to turn our attention now to a great band that you may have heard of. You may have heard rumblings about the lead guitarist and vocalist Jacob Duraps of the band Duraps has been making his name on TikTok, YouTube as an amazing guitarist. You watch any one of his videos, he breaks down other artists' work, and you get a sense of how good the guy's chops are. Well, I saw that his band was coming on February 9th to play the Craft House here in Pittsburgh, and had a chance to check out their album. And I have to say that I think a lot of fans of this show will probably very much enjoy their sophomore album. Is called Viva Rock and Roll. It is available now. We're going to play you a little bit of that, and then we're going to get into that in an interview with Jacob Duraps.
Yeah.
ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks and introduce you all to Jacob DeRaps of DeRaps. How are you doing today, Jacob?
Doing good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. It did not take me more than a few seconds of listening to Viva Rock and Roll, your sophomore release, to realize that we needed to talk. There's a lot of
awesome.
Things, a lot of things that you play that just hit at a perfect chord with my brain. And you guys are coming in February 9th. I believe this is your first time at Pittsburgh, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you're doing a show at the Craft House just outside of the city limits.
First time in Pittsburgh. It's actually our first store in the U.S.
Okay.
We've never done that before, yeah.
All right. So for all you people out there who like to say that you saw, you know, fill in the name of the band on their first American tour, this is your chance to add to that list. So let's talk a little bit about it. I mean, it has a very nostalgic sound to it. You'd be not alone in that regard. But when people ask you to kind of, you know, about the band, how do you kind of describe it?
Definitely in the style of classic rock, music from the 70s and 80s. You know, I grew up listening to bands like Van Halen, and, you know, guitar players, like Randy Rhoads and Eddie and Stevie Ray Vaughan and, you know, stuff like Rat, White Lion, all the great stuff, you know, Guns N' Roses, Slash, from the 70s and 80s. I just love all this kind of music. And my music is based off of, you know, the music of those eras and guitar heroes, you know, guitar hero stuff. I don't think there's a lot of bands and people that do that kind of stuff. Most bands these days, you know, focus on, there's modern rock, but there's also bands who go back and sound more like 70s, but not really guitar hero, guitar based songs, you know, with, you know, guitar at the forefront and guitar solos and stuff like that. You know, that's what I like to do, and that's what my music is all about.
Yeah. I think the other element when I listen to you is it's got a sense of fun to it. And that's something that I think really is. I mean, there are a lot of great guitarists in the world of metal. You know, when you think of, you know, some thrash and younger guys, and you can take a band, even though they're not obviously new, but like a band like Dragon Force, that wasn't there for the 80s heyday of some of that stuff. But the thing I think with yours that I listen to and I don't hear a lot is it's fun. These are songs that kind of encourage you, obviously not in January, but to roll down the windows, crank it up. Was this something that you're a young guy? Was this something that was kind of spilled over from the womb? Your parents were kind of into this music, or how did you kind of latch on to this?
Yeah, I grew up to it. There was always music surrounding me. As far back as I can remember, in the house, in the car, you know, Van Halen, Ozzy, Toto, Michael Jackson, all kinds of, you know, great music from the 70s and 80s. And I just loved it. And, you know, eventually I started playing guitar. And this is always the music that I listened to and that I loved listening to. And there was a video game when I was around 12 years old that was called Guitar Hero, and I played that a lot, and I loved all the music that was on there because it was all great guitar stuff, you know, from the 70s and 80s, like Guns N' Roses, Van Halen. So eventually I wanted to, you know, start playing guitar, and I moved on from Guitar Hero to real guitar. But that was a big part of why, you know, that game just got me into so many songs, so many great bands. So, that was a big part of why I started playing guitar.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I wasn't necessarily in the video game era at the time, but I remember thinking to myself, we mentioned Dragon Force and even the Van Halen edition of Guitar Hero. It was like, this has to be a good thing, even if it's, you know, almost like through osmosis, that kids are going to get to hear this music.
Exactly. It was definitely a great move. And I think a lot of people discovered that kind of music through that game. I mean, there was so many of them. It was Guitar Hero 80s also, which had a lot of cool glam metal kind of songs.
Now, when you, and you might be the first person I've ever talked to who I know did that game and then moved on to the actual instrument. Did that level of dexterity, the obviously with guitar, one of the most important things is the right hand, left hand ability to work in conjunction, where a piano is your two hands are kind of off doing their own thing. But with the guitar, there's a lot of, dependence on the two working in unison. Did you find yourself kind of maybe even, no, you may not have known music theory and things like that, but from a mechanical perspective, did it aid in your guitar playing, like out of the gate?
The video game had nothing to do with real guitar. Absolutely nothing to do. I played the game years later. I've played it this year, actually, recently. I just stumbled across it. I just started playing it, and it's weird when you play guitar and then you go to Guitar Hero. You can do the opposite, but it has nothing to do with real guitar. It's not synchronized properly. The rhythm is kind of off a little bit. You have to play ahead, which it makes no sense. No, it doesn't really have anything to do with it. But
that makes me feel better because I sucked at Guitar Hero. I'm not the most world's most accomplished guitarist, but I remember, being somewhere and someone had, I think, the Aerosmith version of Guitar Hero. I was like, yeah, I could play some of these songs for real. And I picked up the little toy Kramer guitar that came with it. I was like,
yeah,
I suck. It's more like it was more like playing Simon Says than it was for me to go from guitar to Guitar Hero. So I was curious if going the other direction was a help or a hindrance or irrelevant.
No, it was just about the passion for music, and that's it. Nothing to do with the actual instrument. I started playing drums actually when I was 4 years old. My parents got me a drum kit, and I wasn't hooked. I could play though. I could play a couple songs, and I liked it, but I didn't really pursue it. Didn't really matter. I was too young and didn't really care at the time, but I had the sense of rhythm, the groove, the feel, it wasn't until after Guitar Hero that I started playing guitar, and I remember a few times where I actually picked up the guitar when I was younger. My dad showed me a few things, but that was a long time ago. I didn't pursue it either. It wasn't until I was 12. When I was 12, I decided to pick up the guitar and was instantly hooked.
Yeah, that seems to be, for those listening out there, the 12, 13 seems to be a good sweet spot for a lot of kids to pick up the guitar. Because I think before that, you don't have the strength in your left hand to kind of do what's needed. But
I don't know what it was. It was mostly, I think, the passion and the will to learn the instrument. Because I remember, like I said, when I was younger, playing the drums, and I was actually good at it. I remember playing actual songs. I was playing Stone Temple Pilots, which my parents were, they had local bands, and they were rehearsing, and they were playing these songs. And so I played a couple of them. But it's just, after the game, I just had more motivation. I was more motivated, and I had I don't know. There was a click in my head. I was like, I need to learn the guitar. And I learned, I started playing, and there was an actual purpose and motivation for it.
Yeah. And that's
good. I was 11, I think. I think I was 11. Yeah.
Yeah. I think once you get it under your skin, it's a great instrument because it's, in a way it's kind of like golf. You can be average and still enjoy it. You can be exceptional and still have things you want to do better. It always always seems to push you.
I was obsessed with it. I was, and I still am. It's an obsession. It never stopped. Always grew bigger and bigger, and it's the one thing that always stayed.
Yeah. So you have become, obviously you've got two releases out now of exceptional music, but you also have quite a social media following. So that's kind of a chicken or the egg. Was the YouTube kind of the gateway for you into be doing this professionally?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it helped. because of the exposure and, you know, getting myself out there. That was the only way, especially at such a young age. I started YouTube when I was 13, you know?
Yeah.
And I just did it for fun, did it to show people what I could do and to show my passion, to share my passion for music, and just kept posting videos, you know, Van Halen, White Lion, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And eventually started doing shows in bars. I started playing bars when I was, I might have been 13, I was, or I was 14, you know, started playing clubs around here. Mm-hmm. And then eventually TV shows, radio shows, and that was all because of, it all started because of YouTube for sure.
Right. Was it a situation for you, and even now, do you find that your audience is typically people who are slightly older than you, or do you find people of a kind of similar age or younger kind of gravitating because you're a younger guy? You know, you see a band, you know, maybe a White Lion, for example, you know, a lot of members are in their late 50s, early 60s, and there's a certain demographic that go see them. You're a fraction of Mike Tramp's age. No disrespect to Mike, he's still doing it quite well. But do you pull it in some respects a younger audience because of the YouTube aspect, people who, you know, learn that way, and then the fact that you're just a younger guy yourself?
Well, it's hard to say. I think there's people of all age. There's definitely older people because naturally, you know, that's their style of music.
Yeah.
That's their music genre. So there's a lot of older people who listen to my stuff, who follow me on certain social media platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I get a lot of young people from other social media platforms such as Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah.
So, and at shows, I get all kinds of ages, you know, it's great. There's definitely a young crowd for this style of music, because people my age and younger crave this kind of music.
Right.
This music is very, very powerful, and it's good. And once you get into it, you get obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so good, and there's so much energy and so much feel, and it resonates with you. It's not the kind of music that's disposable, you know, such as a lot of songs these days. So you get into it with a passion, and since it's not something that's mainstream these days, people are craving it and they're looking for it, and they're very passionate by it. So yeah, I think there's a younger crowd for it, and it's growing and growing, and
it's great. I think in a lot of ways, this is another thing where I think you're coming at this from a very different perspective from some of the other artists in the genre because of your age and the way you went about this. You know, you know YouTube, you I'm sure picked up TikTok in a matter of a few seconds. Instagram, these aren't giant technical leaps where a lot of artists, I think, you know, we're used to, you know, we have an A&R guy, we go to radio stations, we mail cassettes, whatever it was to kind of build a band. And then the social media age sort of rolled in, and a lot of artists went into that kind of kicking and screaming, or, you know, didn't really know what they were doing. You're coming at this with a skill set kind of inherent to your age and the fact that this is the world, you know. That probably makes this a little bit easier. You know, you put down a tour and people might say, okay, he doesn't have major label support, but you've got 25,000 followers here and 45,000 followers there. You know, we're a band that, you know, may have been out on the road for the last 30 years, may have a very tiny social media presence because they don't emphasize it. So I think it's interesting to kind of watch the trajectory of what you do, and the way you go to,
It's different.
It.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily better though, because I can picture myself, you know, many, many years ago, I would have been very, very different, and it would have probably been better in a way, because social media, you get buried into a sea of content that you create for free. And the whole music industry isn't fueled by you know, money anymore, and it's completely different. You have to work against everyone, and
You're out there. You're absolutely right. You're competing.
It's kind of a curse. I mean, you have to do it. If you don't do it, you're stuck. You can't do it the same way that people used to do shows. People used to go in bars and venues, and people don't go out anymore. And so, you know, it's very, very different. And my opinion on it is that it's not for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it certainly changes the paradigm, where for you, I'm sure monetization of, you know, you decide, okay, I'm going to do a video breaking down the solo of Wait from White Lion, for example. You can conceivably make more revenue from that in a day than you do in physical sales of a CD or t-shirts, you know, depending on scratching the right itch. So you're making creative decisions that you almost have to for your own, you know, to pay the rent, pay the food.
Exactly.
You've got to make decisions on what you spend your time doing based on trying to pay the bills. You know, where, yeah,
exactly,
40 years ago, you went in, for better or worse, because I could find you many, many examples of artists who would say that the way it used to be sucked. You know, a label would throw $400,000 at you, send you to Vancouver, make you a record, and you'd still be paying that loan off today. You know, I can't tell you how many guys we talk to who are, you know, music is kind of a side job, you know, Monday through Friday, they're doing one thing, they're getting on a plane Friday afternoon and, you know, what they're famous for.
Yeah. And, I'm grateful and fortunate enough, you know, to, be living, making music, doing what I love. So that's great, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you could keep your head above water financially, then you're a success, you know, by anybody's, you know, especially from a you know, a musician standpoint. It's not easy to do. The band itself, can you kind of talk about how that evolved? Was this something you kind of just started out, you know, I'm going to, you know, if you played the drums before and, you know,
it was never like a full band. It was always a project surrounding you know, me and my ideas, and I started playing live a long time ago under my name, you know, Jacob the Raps, and eventually I met Josh online, our drummer, Josh Gallagher, and we started doing videos, Van Halen covers and stuff like that, and eventually we started playing live also. And then the project became The Raps, which was still my project, my songs, you know. And then we co-wrote a lot of songs, me and Josh. Most of the songs we co-wrote. He's kind of my partner as far as like songwriting and stuff. And he's playing the drums on the albums also. But, you know, I've always changed bass players. And for this particular tour, I have another drummer also, which is a great guy, because, you know, Josh is in Australia and it complicates things a lot for live shows, you know? It's just, it just wasn't doable. And, you know, it's just, as far as the music, if the people are capable of doing the performances and, you know, we connect and we have fun, then the experience will be the same.
Okay. So for the tour you're going to be doing here in the States, will you be hitting primarily the second album, Viva Rock and Roll, or is it kind of you know, half and half from the debut, or you got covers in there?
I would say mostly focused on the second album with a few songs from the first, and also covers, definitely covers. I love playing songs that people know. I think it's very important. And I love playing, you know, Van Halen stuff. It's always been, you know, I've always been known for that, and I love doing it. So I know people will expect that kind of stuff. So definitely some Van Halen. I like to play Deep Purple stuff, Zeppelin stuff. So, I mean, of course I'm going to have to choose, because, there's, you know, a time limit, but, I'm going to play the best stuff from my albums and classic rock music.
Okay.
It's gonna be a, you know, big rock and roll party. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, as far as the actual night of the show, for those who may not have access, you know, because you don't see the albums in you know, the Kmarts and of the world like you used to back in the day, will you have like the vinyl and some CDs and stuff out on the road with you if people want to pick it up or get it signed or whatever?
Yeah, I'll have all of that, you know, a little bit of merch also, but yeah, mostly CDs and vinyl.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Well, we will see you in just a hair over a month. You'll be doing the Craft House here in Pittsburgh on February 9th. Should be a great night. Very reasonably priced show for those who want to come out. We always hear people, you know, you get the big tour, the Motley Crue of the world, and people scoff at the ticket prices. I actually had to do a double take on your ticket prices because it's the other end of the spectrum. I was like, this is some like 1989 prices.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob's got going on.
Awesome.
Want to talk to your booking agent. I mean, might want to. But let's put it this way: you won't see this band this cheap anymore.
All right, I'll keep it in mind. But you know, it's our first store, so it's fine.
Yeah,
but I'm looking forward to it, though. I mean, first time, and I don't know what to expect. You know, I have no idea. I don't know what to expect, but I know we're gonna have fun because we always do. That's the thing. No matter how big the venue is, no matter how many people there are, if there's 10 people. Well, those 10 people are going to have a blast. I can tell you that. So,
yeah, no, we'll do our best to make sure there's certainly more than 10 people. And I think
there should be a lot more than 10, but I'm just saying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think anybody who hears this in the sound of our voice is going to, you know, at least give it a serious consideration because fantastic stuff, Jacob. I want to thank you so much. We will see you in about 4.5 weeks and I wish you safe travels and all the best, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Again, Jacob DeRaps, and DeRaps will be at the Craft House on February 9th. We will have tickets to those. It's an extremely inexpensive show. And as we mentioned after the Tyketto, always great to get out there and support bands. Pick up some merch, t-shirt, a vinyl, whatever you can to keep this kind of music alive. You can also check out Jacob's, I know I found him via TikTok. If you're more of a YouTube person, you know, obviously he's on YouTube as well. If you're any level of guitarist, you'll find his videos very enjoyable to watch and informative. And the album is just great. The two artists that have been on the show, Tyketto and DeRaps, both with fantastically positive, fun records, the kind that you're going to want to start blasting in your car, you know, especially as the weather hopefully gets warmer very soon. These are both great albums for those of you who are old enough to remember life before your Trans Am had air conditioning, how cool it was to drive around with your radio up and your windows down. So two great albums to get it your hands on for that kind of stuff. So again, they're in town on February 9th at the Craft House. Also, Tyketto's new album will be out on the 20th of March, so you can check that out as well. So I want to thank you all for listening. You can visit ironcityrocks.com for more information, links to buy these albums, the tickets, etc. Our social medias are all Iron City Rocks, and our contact email is ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Would love to hear from anybody who recalls if Tyketto played Pittsburgh. Bonus points if you've got a ticket stub. T-shirt would just be amazing. Let us know what you find in the closet. We'd love to see that. And also invite you to check out right now our Pittsburgh Music Awards are running. The finalists have been announced. So if you're a local musician, there are three artists in each of the categories that were 100% fan voted. The finals will be selected. I believe the date for that is February 4th is the last day to vote. One vote per email, valid email, and this is also 100% fan voted. No one affiliated with Iron City Rocks votes. We just count. So this is a chance to really let all of Pittsburgh know about these great musicians. Let us know. Every year there's somebody we've not heard of, so it's really cool for us as well to kind of go through this, the nominations, and learn more about these great musicians and their great music. So invite you to check that as well. And until next time, we want to thank you so much for listening.